When Lindy West was a kid, she was so shy, she only talked to her parents. And even then, it was mostly in whispers. It's a big difference compared to who she's known as now, an outspoken advocate for women and fat people. Her new book is even called Shrill, Notes from a Loud Woman. Lindy West told Jeannie Yandel she did a lot of thinking about what being fat meant to her.
For my whole life, I believed that I wasn't going to be fat forever because I was going to fix it. And then once I fixed it, then my life could start. And so at some point in my late 20s, I was like, what am I waiting for? Like, what, you know, I started to finally have the courage to confront the question of, what if I never become thin? What if I never succeed at this thing, which I so far haven't, you know, and I had spent my whole life dieting and going to aerobics and whatever, and it hadn't really done much for me except give me a horribly toxic relationship with food, which I would say pretty much every woman I know has. So I started to think about that in a critical way, and I realized that I had been waiting. I'd been waiting to really fully engage in my life because I felt like I wasn't me yet, because that's what they sell you. That's how the diet industry works. Like, when you pay enough money for our services and you stop being lazy and you finally become the real you, then you can have all the stuff you want. You can, you know, fall in love and be successful. And I really bought into that. And then at a certain point, I started dismantling it in my head and I was just done.
I feel like that's the moment that at least anybody in Seattle who reads The Stranger found themselves part of this story that you're telling, your own realization process. You called your boss at the time out. You called Dan Savage out for the way he wrote about fat people. And you said, this is not okay. Why did you decide to do that?
Well, I mean, I think it's, especially at the time, it was really easy to talk about fat people like an abstraction, like a economic and political problem to be solved, and to pretend like there weren't fat people around you in your life and working in your office with you and being your friend and sitting in your living room and having coffee. And you know what I mean? Like, it was this politicized conversation where it was totally acceptable to say we need to eradicate fat people as though there weren't fat people listening, who are people who are in control and in charge of their own lives. I mean, the way that Dan was writing about fat people at the time was totally normal. I don't mean to even say that he was, you know, being a horrible, hateful bigot, because it was normal. That was the way the discourse was going. It was like, obesity epidemic, what are we going to do? Fat people, you know, we need to stop coddling fat people and we need to start telling it like it is and eat less, exercise more, blah, blah, blah. That was fashionable and normal. So, I mean, I'm not even trying to condemn Dan in particular, but having it actually published in my workplace eventually became really demoralizing and difficult. And so after a couple of attempts to talk to him about it privately, I was like, well, here's how we usually handle things here at The Stranger is we put it on Slog. We talk about these things in a really direct way and in a public way that people can participate in and in a performative way. I mean, it's a really performative paper. That's part of the ethos of the paper, is we do these sort of big wacky stunts to make a point. So, yeah, so I wrote this long sort of manifesto and put it on Slog.
The title of which was, I think, if I'm remembering this right, I remember reading it really well. You titled it, Hello, I Am Fat.
Yes.
So it wasn't just about what Dan was saying. It was about you.
It was mostly about me. You know, Dan happened to be the catalyst, but it wasn't really about Dan. It was about everyone who was engaging in this discourse about fatness and the obesity epidemic and, you know, my insurance premiums and whatever. But yeah, it was really about me and where I was in my life and deciding that I wasn't going to be part of this system anymore and let it control my life. So it was this big declaration. And I thought of it even at the time as like a coming out process, because when you believe that you're just a broken thin person, you don't self-identify as fat. And if you don't self-identify as fat, how do you advocate for yourself and ask people to treat fat people better? Because you don't think of yourself as a fat person, so why should you care? You know, it's like there's, you have to come to terms with the fact that at least, and like things can change. My body may still change. I'm sure it will. I mean, bodies change all the time, but I am a fat person right now in this moment. And I don't want to live in an imaginary future anymore. You know, I want to live in the present.
You recognize it as a coming out moment. At the time that you wrote it, you said you kind of knew that's what it was like. But it's one thing to write the words and it's another thing to publish them. What was it like to hit publish? What was that moment like when you were like, okay, everybody, here it is?
It was terrifying and it was so satisfying and liberating. Reclaiming terms is so powerful. I mean, if I've written a whole article acknowledging that I'm fat, what can you do to me? I mean, because at the time I was getting comments all the time that just said, you're fat. Like, okay, yeah. So now what? Good luck hurting me with that thing that I already acknowledged, you know, that I already declared and declared without shame. So yeah, it felt great. I mean, it was really stressful at work, you know, and Dan, there was a lot of drama and Dan and I had to, you know, have a peace summit and whatever. And it was fine. And we're on great terms now, although I don't know that he's read the book yet, but I hope he's not mad at me. And it all ended up working out beautifully. I mean, I think that Dan listened to me and took at least some of what I said to heart. And I think that you can see in his writing that he writes about fat people differently now. And I'm really tremendously grateful to him for that and impressed. It's really hard to listen and hear people and internalize what they're saying and change your thoughts and behaviors. So I really appreciate that. And it's weird, but I didn't know this was going to happen at the time, but looking back, I realized that I had been waiting for my life to start, that I needed to lose weight for my life to start. And then I rejected that in this really public way. And it's like, starting from there, that week I went on my first date with my now husband. My career has really exploded in ways that I never anticipated. Starting there, and obviously there were other things in motion, set in motion before that, but I don't want to sort of engage in this magical thinking, like, because it can't be prescriptive, like, oh, just tell everyone you're fat and then you'll get to marry a cool guy and, you know, like, get a book deal or whatever, because that's ridiculous. But I think just in terms of, it was a product of where I was in my life, and it really was true for me that I was holding myself back and I needed to stop doing that in order to live the life that I wanted and that I was capable of. So, yeah, that was a hugely transformative moment. And I'm grateful to Dan for that, honestly. So don't be mad at me. I love you.
I'm talking with Lindy West. We're talking about her book. It's called Shrill: Notes from a Loud Woman. And one of the things that I think a lot of our listeners might know you for, this is one of the ways that I know you now, is when you decide to publicly call out people who make anonymous comments about you. They say awful, ugly things about you, about women, and sometimes you make decisions about not letting them be anonymous. You call them out, you pull them out of that anonymity. Can you think of an example of a commenter who, I mean, even recently, who you've been like, okay, you don't get to hide?
Well, I mean, there are so many. so many. I don't know. Last week, there was some guy who had been sending me just ridiculous insults on Instagram. And
like, what was he saying?
Oh, it was just like, oh, you're a fat loser and your husband's a loser and he married a whale and you could eat a whole whale. And you're like, okay. And I clicked on his profile and he was clearly like an adult man. Like, he wasn't a 14-year-old boy. He was like a 35-year-old man. And I just wrote back like, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing this? And do your friends and family know that you harass women online for fun like a child? What is wrong with you, man? Like, what's wrong with your life? Why don't you go do something with your life? It's so embarrassing. It's so embarrassing. Can you imagine? And And he was like, and he actually answered my question. He was like, no, they do not know that I do this. Please do not tell my girlfriend. She would be really mad at me. And so then I was like, oh, good idea. And so, and he was, I just clicked on his account and there's all these pictures with his girlfriend who looks, who seems very nice. So I just sent her a message and I was like, hey, is this guy your boyfriend? Because he has been harassing me all week. And if it were my husband, I would want to know. You know, if my husband was doing this, I would want to know. So just FYI, here's a screenshot of the messages he's been sending me. You don't need to write back. I wish you well. Bye. And I told him, like, I had said back to him in the comments, like, oh, well, maybe I'll send her some screen grabs and she can help you. Because he had been like, I'm trying to get help for my trolling problem. So I was like, maybe your girlfriend, maybe I'll send her some screen grabs and then she can help you. And then he just started groveling and begging and was like, please do not contact my girlfriend. I love my girlfriend very much. And like sent me a picture of like a dinner from Benihana that he bought her. And I was like, I don't care, man. But it was just so pathetic and hilarious. And so anyway, and she never wrote back. My suspicion is maybe he like went into her phone and deleted it before she could read it. I don't know.
You don't just make a point of spending time outing and talking to people who just sort of come up with really uninteresting insults. You have also called people out who have said, frankly, awful, scary things. People who have threatened violence. Why do you think that that's an important thing to do as well?
Well, when I get really violent, scary comments, and you can tell which ones are threatening and which ones are just trying to get a rise out of you, because some people are really viscerally scary. And those ones I don't really touch. I report those and block them. And I haven't gotten to the point where I was afraid enough to contact the police. But that's what I would do if it was a really specific, scary threat. You know, like, I'm going to come to your reading on this date and murder everyone, whatever. That's something where it's not like I would sass back on Twitter. I would quietly screen cap and report that to the police. But yeah, I mean, I think that there's a level of violent, but not so specific, you know, just still kind of unsettling threats that you get. And I don't know, with those, I don't usually respond to people directly, but I do sometimes post them because I think that a lot of people don't know the extent of this problem and what especially female writers and journalists are putting up with all day, every day, and how, I mean, cumulatively, it's really scary and it really makes you feel unsafe and targeted. So I don't know. I think one big reason why I engage with trolls on the internet is to make the problem visible to other people who aren't living with my Twitter feed. You know, that is really important to me. And also, there are a lot of especially younger women who are just thinking about entering journalism or writing or blogging who are nervous and who write to me and say, I want to do this, but I'm scared of trolls and I'm scared of being harassed. And so I feel like if I can talk back and fight back in a public way and embolden some of those women to maybe not be so scared and give them a script for dealing with their own trolls and, you know, be a model for how you can still do this job and not be chased away. That's really important to me, too.
In the book, though, you also talk about, I guess, what it's cost you. You talked about having to build up a kind of armor and that armor can be heavy. Do you think it's been worth the cost?
I think so.
How come?
I said that so fast and now I'm not sure if that's true. No, I mean, it's definitely made me stronger. I mean, I used to be painfully shy and the worst thing I could imagine was someone detecting my deepest insecurity and making fun of me for it. And now that happens to me every day. And it really, it's powerful that I've learned how to deal with that. It makes life a lot less scary. And I really feel like, as painful as it's been, I've learned a lot from being constantly harassed on the internet because it makes you face your biggest anxiety, which has always been people being mean to me, people not liking me. You know, everyone wants to be liked. I really I really want people to like me. I mean, good people. I don't care if Donald Trump likes me or whatever. But I mean, I wouldn't have a career if I cared what everyone thought about me, because a lot of what I do is criticize bad people. But, you know, I was always afraid of people yelling at me and people making fun of me. And it happens every day now, and I feel fine. And that's really empowering.
I'm remembering something you wrote in the book. You talked about, well, you talked about loving fantasy as a kid. You talked about kind of escaping into fantasy stories. And you compared fighting trolls online to fighting dragons a little bit. Maybe you've become this lady knight.
Yes.
And you fight.
Finally.
But you're not fighting one dragon. You're fighting an infinite number of dragons, it seems like. So I don't know. When do you get to stop? When do you get to hand the sword to somebody else?
Soon, probably. I'm bored of it. I am tired. No, you know, I don't have to do it forever. There are all kinds of really smart, radical young people who are taking over these internet spaces, and people who know a lot more about web development than I do. You know, I don't know how to fix internet trolling. I know how to critique culture, which I think is maybe the key component. You know, the problem isn't that Twitter exists, it's that misogyny exists. So that's the most effective way I can spend my time is writing this sort of feminist cultural critique. And I hope that I contributed in some way to people feeling like they can fight and they know how to.